seven, the 07, the 7, and the 77.
Well, yes. I don't see an 07.
There's no 07?
No, there's no 07.
So it's 7, 77, and 71.
71.
Okay. Give me an easy one, like a low number. Give me something.
6.
Brad Keselowski.
Yeah. 5.
Kyle Larson.
Yeah. 4.
Noah Gregson.
Yeah. 11.
Denny Hamlin.
That's an easy one.
Welcome to the Big One Podcast. This is B-Boy, and the Big One Podcast is all about motorsports, so you're in the right place. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, follow us at Podcast Big One, or email us at podcastbigone@gmail.com with all your thoughts and questions and dirty pics, I guess. I don't know, whatever you're feeling. Dirty pics of cars. Don't go there. All right, well, with me, as always, is Baby G. Baby G, say hi to the folks at home.
Hey, listeners. We are here, and we are doing it on the Big One Sponsor Podcast. Big One Ooh. Podcast sponsored by Cuervo. We mentioned them as a official NASCAR sponsor a couple episodes back, but they are also sponsoring us this week, and the reason why is I am fresh off of a racing weekend out in Phoenix, and I've got here with me a beautiful NASCAR Jose Cuervo cup. We've got some Jose Cuervo bandanas. Ooh. And they were nice enough to throw us a little kickback as well for buying their product, and we got them as a sponsor this week. What do we think about that, Cuervo?
You know, we were talking about the tequila, the official tequilas, and you know, it's Cuervo, and now it's here. I'm glad they're a fan of the podcast. I definitely am.
We love it. I have to say, I probably should not say this, but the money's all in the bank, so I will. We sampled some Cuervo out of the track, and we were not fans. It was a spicy Cuervo. It did not hit for me. It was hitting for some other people, but me and Papa G, we did not dig the spice.
Ah, okay. Noted. Yeah, can't say that I like Cuervo. So, yeah, this was totally your sponsor. Wouldn't have been mine. Let's move right along. First, we'll go through some storylines, and then we're going to get into some race recaps, and Baby G's going to tell us his experience, because he was there! But what storylines we got this week, Baby G?
First one, mixed ruling in court today, as Gabe Hart can continue working for Spire, so long as it's not the same duties as JGR. In the next hearing, a preliminary junction on March 16th, so NASCORT continues.
Yeah, and I saw something about they submitted sealed files, which is basically what Gabe Hart's role is at Spire now, and that must be okay. So yeah, he can continue. You know, it's a back and forth kind of thing here. I felt like the last NASCAR, we just waited so long. This one's at least proceeding early on with the injunction and whether or not he can proceed. And so far, Gabe Hart wins. We'll see how it keeps going. Next up, Cletus. The biggest controversy in NASCAR, honestly, is going to race the O'Reilly Series with RCR. A lot of controversy here. Why is there controversy, Baby G?
Biggest controversy here is most people just don't think he's ready. And the other thing is, just because you have money doesn't mean you should get a free pass and not have to go through the same metrics and experiences and working your way up the ladder that other people are. So the biggest thing is people think he's just going to get in some of these O'Reilly races. The first one he is doing at Rockingham, and he's just going to get torn apart by that track.
Yeah, the Rockingham's a tough one to kind of just go in there and race. But I'll say, like, in terms of silver spooning at RCR, I mean, the one of the Dillon brothers has had a car there for how long? I mean, it's not like they're strangers to it. Austin Cindric, I think, came up through the series and with Penske because of Silver Spoon. But the difference here is there's no there's no relation, right? It's not a nepotism kind of thing, and it's not he's from a racing family and he grew up racing. He grew up liking racing, and he's grown up racing maybe some other things, or not, I shouldn't say grown up, he's raced other things, but he just doesn't have the experience maybe to jump into one of these cars at this level. But you know what, I don't know, I we've seen so many other people get money behind them for dumb reasons. And, you know, his dumb reason is that he has a lot of followers. And if he can bring those followers to the sport, fuck it. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me. I think he's no worse than a Danica or a Haley Deegan, or not to pick on the women of the sport, but the ones that definitely are there without the talent level to back it up. You know, yes, he wrecked immediately when we were the last time that he raced. I hope he has a better outing this time. I hope he spends a lot of time on the simulator. You know, I know that he can't go and practice at Rockingham, but maybe he can go and practice at other tracks, racing some other type of cars. I don't know. He just needs some practice, and he's allowed to race. As long as they say he's allowed, he's allowed.
Love it. Last storyline that we got this week in a short week of storylines. Alex Bowman, unfortunately, is going to be out of the 48 car again, and Justin Allgaier is filling in. So the vertigo continues, I believe. They haven't announced anything medical, but the last thing he was out with last week was announced as vertigo. So unfortunate break again for Bowman here.
Yeah. Vertigo strikes again. It definitely sucks. This is, more than anything, this is hurting Bowman's chances of making the playoffs. Because, you know, if it had been last year or any of the previous 10 years, he would have the opportunity to just come back. You know, he's got the waiver, medical waiver, and then he comes back and he wins a race and he's in. It doesn't really matter. But each one of these races he misses just puts him further out of the playoffs. He's still driving a Hendrick car, and he's still a very capable driver. So he could still get there. But you know what? I don't know that Bowman's going to be in this car next year. And, you know, maybe Allgaier has raced up for in the Cup Series, filling in for other folks when Chase had his suspension and some other folks. So Allgaier filling in makes total sense. I don't think Allgaier is going to take Bowman's ride, but I do think that someone else will. But I do think that Bowman will end up in a Cup car. Maybe it's too early to start speculating about silly season, but I think Bowman will have a Cup ride just elsewhere. Or he'll stay with Hendrick because Ally throws money behind him. I think I said that earlier in the season, but worth reiterating. Cool. Let's jump into some race recaps. Actually, let's do a weekend recap. Will you tell us about your trip?
Absolutely. So weekend recap before the race recap. I'll go through this as fast as I can, but it's basically just as fast as I did the trip. So four nights in Phoenix, got in on a Friday at 11:58 p.m., didn't get our rental car until well after 2 a.m. because the lines were just insane. So not a great start to the trip, but partially because our flight was delayed and we actually got to the rental car line after our reservation day, so we couldn't use the fast break. It is what it is. But we got to the hotel, slept in for a couple hours, hit the local Safeway in the morning for our beer, liquor, soda, snacks, sandwiches, all that good stuff. Commerce. And right off to a Brewers spring training baseball game on Friday afternoon. The coolest thing about this was I was actually able to meet up with some of my friends that I play volleyball with at the game, which was awesome. Met my dad. We had a good time. Drank a beer out in the outfield together.
Love it.
Get back to the hotel. Shower.
Wait, hold on. Did you not meet a certain driver there, or was this later?
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm trying to go through this fast, but I'm leaving out the best part of that Brewers game. So actually met Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at the Milwaukee Brewers spring training game. He threw out the first pitch, and they said, Ricky's going to be over in section 113 signing autographs. So I pop over there and there's like nobody around. Nobody knows who he is. Really? And I just go, he's talking to what looks like some of his sponsors or something. I go, hey, Ricky, I don't need an autograph or anything, man, but just good luck at the race on Sunday. Hope you have a great day. And he goes, hey, I appreciate it. You want to do a picture or something since you want an autograph? So I go, hell yeah, let's get a selfie together. So that was wild. Like, not my favorite driver, cool. Not our favorite driver, but it's cool to see him, and I still respect his game.
Yeah, you know what? I've never really hated on Ricky. I think he's a bit of a menace when it comes to the super speedways, but beyond that, I think he's a hard-nosed racer. If anything, we might have some political misalignment, but otherwise, I think he's a fine guy. But what's up with these Big One podcast guys and running into drivers at baseball games? As I remember, I hung out and had two beers with Kurt Busch at a Braves game a couple years ago. So,
Rad, hopefully he wasn't driving after.
Oh, no. This was actually just like a number of weeks before that Pocono wreck that took him out, you know, retired him. So that was unfortunate, but he's a really cool guy. So awesome. Well, let's keep going. What else you got?
Yeah, so rest of the day Friday was we hit two breweries, then we went to a Phoenix Suns game. So figure I'm out in Phoenix. The Suns are in town. We had no plans Friday night. They played the New Orleans Pelicans.
Nice.
So as you expect, they won, but they were up, I want to say, 15 points going into the fourth quarter and only ended up winning by two. So it was cool to see another arena, see how they present the game.
Yeah.
Fun to see. Fans around us were cool. Even though they knew we were Bucks fans, we still just talked, had a good time, and we all kind of laughed about their pathetic Western Conference Finals 2021 banner that they hung up out there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you've got a leg up on the Phoenix folks. It's kind of like when I come to Portland games, Atlanta United beat Portland for their MLS Cup, so it's always fun to rub that in.
Absolutely. Cool, so then Saturday, IndyCar. All day at the track, we got IndyCar O'Reilly's. No need to get into that. Sunday, all day at the track, hit the cup race, and then some breweries and a pizza joint after. And then last day on Monday, we got up early, did some walking around a park near the hotel, ended up going back, packing up, checking out, hit up the Desert Botanical Gardens, which was amazing. Had never been out to Phoenix before, and this was really high on my list of things to do, so actually did the 11 a.m. private tour, so paid a little extra for that because you're going to a massive botanical gardens. You might as well pay someone to take you around and see the highlights and teach you about the desert climate.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't think I've ever done that. And like I said, I think on a previous podcast, I was out there for a number of weeks. And yeah, didn't even know that was a thing. That sounds really cool.
It was cool, man. Yeah, absolutely loved it. So then last couple things we did. So we hit the Hole in the Rock, a pretty famous hiking spot out there, and then ended up dropping by two breweries near the hotel, getting dinner, or not near the hotel, near the airport, getting dinner and getting the hell out of there at 7 p.m. on Monday. So hell of a trip. Love that my dad was able to take some racing in with me, go see a baseball game, basketball game, museums, breweries. We did all the things that you want to do on a boys trip.
That sounds, it sounds like a really fun time. I'll say, like, it sounds like the worst part was getting that car, understandably so. It also sucks that you get to Phoenix and then you have to, like, drive or get in the shuttle for 40 miles before you get to the car rental place.
Right, that was absurd. Reason, I could not believe that, yeah.
It's like, it's got to be the furthest one from an without airport. Without a doubt. Without getting into travel stuff here. Vegas isn't very close. Or actually, no, not Vegas. Denver is not very close either, but Denver's just a massive airport, so anyway. That's for our airport podcast. Feel free to follow us at podcast Big Air. If you wanna follow us there. Cool. Let's talk IndyCar. Let's break down the action. Let's have you break down the action. I only got to watch about half this race.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, so we saw the whole thing and we soaked in the midway before the race. We got there super early because I'm a fan of just getting to the track early, getting parked so you're up front so that when you leave, you can kind of leapfrog all the people that got to get on the trams and hustle back to the car. You can just kind of haul ass, get to your car, and scoot out of there before the crowds leave. So loved it. A lot of people in the crowd were only there for IndyCar on Saturday. A lot of people left after the IndyCar race and didn't stay for O'Reilly's. Or I talked to a decent amount of people because I was wearing a Formula One shirt, a Danny Ricciardo Pit Stop in Paradise shirt. I was wearing an IndyCar neon pink and blue hat. So people were like, oh, you're here for IndyCar, right? Like, I'm like, no, I'm here for both. Like, I love O'Reilly's, love Indy, love Cup. I just want to see the racing. So starting out the race, David Malukas on pole. So this was awesome. His first pole with Team Penske taking over for Will Power. Alex Palou, at the very first part of this race, he gets taken out in what to me was a little bit of a racing deal. A lot of people were saying it was Rinus VK's fault. I didn't see it that way. VK had all the momentum. Palou ended up fading up on him late. VK just could not get out of the way fast enough or out of the gas. There's nothing you can do going 180 miles an hour. So just kind of an unfortunate deal. And it really, honestly, made probably for a much better race with how dominant Palou has been in the IndyCar series the last 2 years.
Yeah, I'll say, like, when I joined in the race, I think it was about, like, 50 laps in at that point. And I immediately saw that Palou was last. And so I was like, oh, I got to go back and see what happened. And when I watched it, I agree. I think, like, you can say racing incident, maybe an IndyCar, you know, there's some more open wheel in general. There's just more rules about, like, making moves and not, like, blocking late and all this kind of stuff. But, like, when you're racing the ovals in IndyCar, it is a lot more like the drafting tracks in NASCAR. And it was just one of those same drafting things where a guy just came up a little bit late, the other guy had a run. There's nothing either person can do. I think you nailed it.
So really the star of the show in this race was Christian Rasmussen, and this guy is proving to be an absolute madman on the short ovals. It started at Milwaukee. It happened at Nashville. It happened at Gateway, and now it's happening against Phoenix, and he's the only guy who seems to not give a shit about just pushing the absolute living fuck out of his car. He gets loose, and he knows he's good enough that he can control it. So in the first 21 laps, we had the scanner, so we were getting a lot of the information from the radio broadcast, every once in a while popping over to the IndyCar feed, etc. And at one point they go, he's got 41 passes in the first 125 laps, so he's just literally dominating this race. All over the track, though, not just him, there was passing, and I think I saw a stat that there were some 580-plus laps under green flag. So, I mean, I could hardly
580 passes under green flag.
Passes under green flag, not laps. Correct. So I could hardly keep up with the action with the scanner. And at some point, I'm like, I'm just going to watch Rasmussen for, like, 40 laps and see what he does. And every lap, he's just, like, sending it in there, holding the high line with the momentum. It was so good racing. Like, I couldn't believe it. Absolutely loved the speed that they had. Coming near the end of this race, Rasmussen's clearly driving his way to the front, and he's in, I believe, second place, going to slice and dice and go for the lead. And I go to my dad on the scanner. He just has to be patient, take his time. Like, every lap, he's closer, closer. He's going to get the run. And, like, the next lap, he just pushes too hard and wrecks himself. And I just, like, put my hands on my head, and it was like, literally, you were gonna win the race if you just set the guy up one or two more laps. But that's kind of what it takes to win some of these oval IndyCar races. You just have to push nonstop, because you never know when the white or when the yellow flag's gonna come out, and then you go back to single file restarts, and it's, you got to build all that momentum back up again.
Yeah, I think nailing this one too. I think what I saw there was just a guy, not that was impatient, but that had trusted that ability to kind of push the car a little bit more to get past a guy the whole race. And you're kind of living on that razor's edge. It's like the guys that run the fence at so many different tracks. You're right there against the wall. You could hit the wall. If you just get into a corner just a little bit too hard, or you pick up the gas a little too early, you're going to be in the wall. And that's exactly how Rasmussen was kind of racing that race. And that's all that happened. He hit the wall.
Coming to the finish of this thing, so after that caution, we go green with 31 to go, and you just had the sense that Mr. King of the Short Oval, Joseph Newgarden, had the right combination of car, experience, skill on the ovals. He ends up going for the pass, I want to say, with 6 to 7 laps. I don't remember exactly, but it was one of those things where it's like, okay, kind of some of the big players on the ovals got taken out. Newgarden's up there, and he brings it home for the win. So at the end of the day on this thing, a Penske pole with Moulukas and a Penske win with Newgarden.
And the most laps led, I believe. Yeah, it was a Penske really, really great weekend. We'll get into the rest of it here in a second. So cool. I'm going to break down O'Reilly really quickly. Stage one, we had Sammy Smith taking home that first stage. Stage two, we had Jesse Love coming back to where he won his championship, I guess less than a year ago. And then stage three, the guy that just seems to always just get it done when it matters, Justin Allgaier, who you have the note here, same winner as when we were in Charlotte together. That's very true. Yeah, let's break down some of the kind of action here. Really, really clean race, really good race. There was a lot of passing. There was a lot of guys that had good cars early, a lot of different strategies for tires. Honestly, like, everything you want to see in a race. And the O'Reilly series cars do a really, really good job of being able to stay bunched together and kind of run down a guy, be right on his tail, pack air under his fender, kind of move him up out of the way without actually touching him. Like, that kind of old racing action, the thing that we used to see at Phoenix and at Richmond and other tracks all the time in the Cup Series, these O'Reilly cars are still perfect for. Really, really fantastic race.
O'Reilly's was an absolute banger at Phoenix. Mm-hmm. It may have been just coming off the high of an amazing IndyCar race, being able to spend some more time in the midway, hitting the car to cool off, have a sandwich, have a beer, like tailgating, just talking with fans around us, doing the absolute same thing. And a lot of people were saying, like, you normally come to the Saturday race and it's relatively low energy, right? It's a NASCAR Truck Series, or it's an O'Reilly series, or it's a combination of ARCA and O'Reilly. But when you get IndyCar and O'Reilly on the same track, and the stands were packed. Like, I don't know what the attendance was, but, like, around us, the fans were super into both races, the ones that stayed. We had some Justin Allgaier fans behind us, and really, we didn't talk about it, but Jesse Love kind of dominated this race. He didn't end up getting the win, but he dominated. And at the end, though, Allgaier came on. I don't really remember the strategy of it or anything, because when you're at the track for like 10 hours, at a certain point, it kind of just runs together. But
yeah,
all of a sudden, the people behind us are going bonkers when Allgaier's, like, you know, taking the lead, going for the win. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I love Allgaier too. So, like, I'm rooting for Allgaier now, right? We're big Sam Mayer fans. My dad loves the guy because it's his hometown guy. He had a good race as well. So, end of the day in this thing, loved it. The scanners really helped me and Papa G follow the race because he doesn't watch O'Reilly's as much as I do. He doesn't know all the guys. He knows the top five to six drivers, but he doesn't know anybody outside of that. So, the investment in the scanners paid off.
It always pays off. Those are fantastic. And I really love that y'all did spend the extra money or get the one that you can talk to each other in. I don't know if that's like the base level anymore. But it's worth
not,
it.
It's
so
not expensive, man. I think I paid $88 for the whole weekend for the two headsets, the intercoms, etc. So really, I looked at buying them at one time, and the cost of those is up to like $900. And I was like, fuck this. Like, the 10 races I'm going to go to over the next decade that I don't have to haul this thing in my carry-on bag. I don't have to bring my own batteries. Like, pay the money, get the scanners. It's going to elevate your racing experience from like an 8 to a 10 immediately, or a level 6 race to a 9. Like, it just you can't go without it. I don't know how people do it. And I also don't know how people go without ear protection. It is insane.
Yeah, I'll say Phoenix, it's not the worst because it's a kind of an open-air stadium, and so obviously like a lot of the sound. I don't know that you've been to one of the louder ones, because we've been to Daytona. Daytona's pretty loud. I guess the cars that we saw when we were at Daytona weren't as loud. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, you go to Bristol, the sound is so reverberating, like, you do absolutely need ear protection. I don't necessarily agree at Phoenix, but then again, I'm a person that, like, has been to so many concerts, my hearing's probably, and NASCAR races, that my hearing's probably bad anyway, so maybe I'm just used to it. Exactly. The headphones, though, yeah, just killer. I mean, I always bring them. Obviously, like, I brought some to the races that we've been to. I have a pair and a scanner myself, but my scanner's super old, and at this point, I actually just prefer to rent. So, cool. Let's break down some of the cup action. We can kind of split this one up. Why don't you go through the stages?
Let's do it. Stage one winner, Ryan Blaney. Stage two winner, Christopher Bell, and drumroll, your stage three and race winner, Ryan Blaney, also the same race winner as Charlotte. Don't know how this happens, but our guys that we pull for tend to win when we're there, so we got to go to more races.
I think it's 50-50. We either have the guys that we love that win or the guys that we hate, because we've seen, at least with me and New Guy for sure, we've seen a fair number of Austin Dillon wins. Weirdly, we saw him win the Coke 600 and the 500. We've seen a lot of Logano wins, races I've been at, but yeah, I've seen a fair number of Larson wins, been lucky enough to see one Reddick win. So yeah, it's and a couple of Blaney wins. Yeah. So
it's funny because now that I think about it, I've seen two Larson wins at Sonoma in Kansas. I've seen a Austin Cindric win at Daytona.
Yep.
Now I've got two Blaneys. Can't think of what I'm missing. I think that's it for cup races. Oh, I've seen, Chicagoland, maybe Kyle Busch in 2018. I think
Larson. Yeah, the Kyle Busch Larson one.
Yeah, dude. So I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, like the same. It's like love the guy or hate the guy. There's
yeah,
no between.
Yeah, just how,
which
just
is fine
how
with
works.
Me, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go through some of the stuff that happened. First off, Logano started on the pole. Penske was just right up front at the very get go of this race. Larson did start in second. He faded early, and it was a Penske 1-2-3 right out of the gates, but early on, it looked like Blaney had the car. Bell started deep. I forget why he started deep, if he had some kind of an issue in practice or qualifying that made him start like in the back. But he didn't start up front or in the top 10 at all, and just had a bad qualifying run maybe. But he made his way up a lot in stage one, and it was very apparent that he was a really, really good car. That said, Blaney, because he started very, in the first couple laps, he got to the top three. He and the rest of the Penske guys looked like the top three to beat. As we got a little bit further on, Kyle Busch had a flat tire, no caution. SVG goes around right after for a caution at lap 93. We had a couple of these instances where it just seemed like chaos happened all at once. It was like two guys have a flat tire, but they weren't the caution. Some other guy was. And this happened like two or three times during the race. Kyle Busch just had a really, really bad day. Three different down tires. You have in the note here that he's just slow and he's checked out. Yeah, I mean, one of his down tires was when a caution was about to come, or a caution had come out, and he had the lucky dog. And all he had to do was limp around the track, and he would have gotten the lucky dog, and then gotten his new tire, and been on the lead lap. And he just didn't. He just chose not to. They told him on the radio, stay out. You're the lucky dog. And he just didn't. He came down and stayed a lap down. And there's definitely frustration there. I mean, Kyle Busch has always been this hothead kind of guy, but his performance has always made it that you kind of brush that all to the side, you brush it under the rug, and you kind of deal with it. The performance isn't there now, and he can use that as an excuse, and he can say, like, you know what, I'm talking to Spire, because that's the big rumor, right? I'm talking to Spire, I'm going to go there at the end of the year, so fuck off, I don't care about these guys. I'm just going to get through the season, and then I'll race somewhere better. But, like, I don't know. This it's like having a toxic person in your NBA locker room, right? Like, if you get a reputation for this, maybe your leash at Spire will be shorter than you think it will be. I don't think, like, when he went to RCR, there was a lot of talk about, like, he's going to get ownership to go there because he's a driver still relatively at the top of his game. At this point, I don't think he fetches that price when he goes to Spire or anywhere else here on. But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, let's keep breaking it down. What else you got?
Funniest thing that I did during this race was I go to, you know, you get these cautions and it's like, okay, it's going to be at least 10 minutes to run around, mm-hmm. do a couple cycles of tires and gas them up, et cetera. So I go, hey, I got to take the headset off. I can go to the bathroom real quick. And, you know, we had some bourbon and Cokes, a little inside baseball there, even at a track where you can't bring in cans of beer. You can bring in some bourbon and Coke, no problem. So
yep.
Kind of bourboned out. I go, oh, I'm going to go hit the head real quick and come back with some 24-ounce Kolsch's. And my dad's like, nice. Oh, hell yeah. He's like, I couldn't really go for a beer right now. The bourbon's kind of like, I kind of had enough bourbon or whatever. I'm like, you got it, buddy. And then the funniest thing is, like, you go to these tracks and obviously the craft beer selection isn't great because, let's face it, most motorsports fans of the NASCAR and the O'Reillys, even IndyCar, like, we're beer guys, right? Busch Light, mm-hmm. Bud Light, Coors Light, whatever it may be on the lighter fashion. So the only option I see for craft in a 24-ounce can is this Kolsch. I immediately grab those, scan, and get the hell out of there. So loved it.
Nice.
Getting back to the racing action, my guy, Chase Briscoe, he's another one of these guys that the tires were a little bit too aggressive. They had mm-hmm. pressure too low. He's out at lap 133, and that was a massive hit.
Yeah.
Really hard hit. So we saw the tire go down right in front of our section because we were right between turns 3 and 4. So where a lot of the tires went down was kind of in our wheelhouse, and that one, you could hear it. It sounded bad.
Yeah, and I'll say, like, what he had just passed Reddick, and so the TV was actively watching their battle. By the way, we didn't talk about Reddick, and I don't think we have a note on him, but, like, the drive for 4 was not in vain. Like, it looked pretty good for good parts of the day, especially on restarts. He seemed to make up a lot of time, and then at the end he just kept getting in bad lines for restarts. But anyway, Briscoe's tire went down. I saw on the radioactive that he called out the vibration.
Yeah,
the
guys basically were like, multiple times.
Yeah, but the guys were like, you know what? You had a vibration here last year and ended up being nothing. So let's just, like, wait it out. And that ended up being the bad call. I mean, it's one of these things where, like, Briscoe is an experienced driver at this point, and, you know, he is with a newish team. He was there last year, but he's still in that kind of spot where I don't know that he knows that he can make that call and just go, guys, no, I need to come down. If it's Kyle Busch, he's coming down, right?
We just
talked about that. Yeah. But, like, I think Briscoe's still kind of figuring that part out, and kind of, like, what he's, I guess, maybe not allowed to do, but, like, how much he should trust himself versus trust the team. JGR knows what they're doing, so you want to trust them most of the time. But occasionally, the driver's going to know best. His butt's the thing vibrating. He should know.
Bringing home stage 2 here, so we've got more tires go down around lap 160, and this is, like you said, this is where one went down, and then two or three more went down, like immediately total. After. Yeah. It was like boom, 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 all in a row. Just too aggressive setup, and we didn't mention it yet, but the more horsepower, we're up to 750 on the mile and under. So the tires are just wearing more. The pressures were aggressive. It was very hot and slick at the track. So a perfect combination to make these things hard to drive and take down those tires. So stage two, Christopher Bell kind of just ran away with it as he, in my opinion, just totally dominated stage two from the eye test.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, for what it's worth, like this race reads kind of like the races that we saw last year where like track position mattered the most and dirty air was killing everyone behind them and Blaney Bell Blaney. It looks like only a couple guys are up there, but honestly, there was really great action, especially on restarts, but even longer runs because of the tire wear. And I kind of want to save my take on the whole race here for a second, but like tire wear did matter. Next kind of thing here, going into stage three, but Blaney's crew had a couple of mistakes, two different loose wheels. The first, it actually sounded like on the radio that he was okay with both because I think he knew he had a rocket ship, right? He knew he could get back there. But they both kind of happened during stage two, and then you know, going to stage three, he was kind of making his way back up. He knew he could pass, so that was a really optimistic thing for him. And then two, he just knew he had a rocket ship, so he knew he could get there. But at that point, Bell still looked like the Bell of the ball. He looked like the guy to beat, and you know, there were a couple other guys, a couple other the Penske guys that looked really good too. But this is when kind of chaos broke out. We just started to see different accidents. A lot of restarts, people trying to go, people trying to cut the dog leg, cutting it too much, cutting across people's noses. I mean, you know, the spotter from where they're sitting, because they're not sitting above the dog leg, they're sitting on the other side, and the angle with which they're having to like look at the guys splitting across, it's really hard to say that there's a nose here or a nose there above you or below you. And so you're kind of like, it's five wide. I don't know. You might be a nose. This guy that I'm saying is part of the five wide might only have a nose in there. He might actually be clear. I can't tell. But that's how they kind of have to call it out. And it's just so quick, the moves that you have to make to defend, to not lose those positions on those restarts, that it just kind of caused some chaos. But I think it was like just the right amount of chaos. And we'll, again, we'll get into that here in a second. So we get down here with 18 to go. There was a record 12 cautions at Phoenix. That was our final caution of the race. Bell makes the decision to go with two tires, and then just about everyone else takes two. But Blaney gets it done. He had the best car. He started up front. He kind of took it away, ran away with it. Another Penske pull-and win, a Penske sweep, at least not considering the O'Reilly series, but between Cup and IndyCar, Penske kind of gets it done. Oh, you're right. You just added that. Bell took four tires. That's what set him back.
And Blaney, correct. I had two. Incorrect, yes. In the notes. He took four. Everyone, yes, else took two. My bad.
Yeah, and that ended up being the difference. Bell did, you know, give another 10 laps in that race. Maybe Bell does win it because he did track down Blaney. Dirty air does play a role, especially as the tires even out. And he kind of got to that dirty air. It was slowing him down a little bit. I think, give him 10 more laps, he would have made that pass. Bell would have won. But Blaney with the two tires, with how long it took Bell to get by everyone to get up there, that was just enough. Thoughts on the race?
Final thoughts are, first time out at Phoenix Raceway, watching the Cup cars was absolutely spectacular. This track is gorgeous. The view from the seats, looking over the mountains, really nice, really cool. Man. The facilities are pretty nice. You know, I've only been to a handful of tracks. I think I've been to 8 NASCAR tracks now. And this has to be up there as far as amenities and the comfort of really seating, nice, bathrooms. The Midway was pretty cool. The only thing that I didn't like was the parking, like just the dust, dirt parking lot. That is not, no bueno, man. That's not good. It's not good for tailgating. Like, your shoes just get trashed. If it rains, it's going to be a mud fest. But that's, you know, that's minor stuff that's not going to take away from your race weekend. So I'm going to save some of my commentary because we did get some hot mic clips at the hotel after the Cup race. My dad, Papa G, and I, we did some light race recaps. We ranked our 1, 2, 3 as far as what these three races were from an entertainment aspect. So we'll drop that in the podcast, maybe at the end, maybe in the middle here. But we do have that. So yeah, overall, a great racing weekend at Phoenix. Could not have asked for better weather. Could not have asked for better fans around us. The employees were excellent at all of the vendors I hit up. The Midway was packed with sponsors. Got a lot of free stuff.
Heck yeah.
Cool merch. Got the 2026 diecast limited edition Phoenix.
Yep.
Right nice. Here, you can't see it because we're not on video, but I saw this and I'm like, I don't care what it costs. So I don't even remember. I'm just buying it because money's fungible and you can't take it with you, and we work hard enough to enjoy it.
Yeah, there you go, man. Great call-outs. Yeah, I think, like, this was the best Phoenix race I'd seen in a very long time. I can't even remember Phoenix races that I actually really enjoyed. The fact is that the championship happened here for a number of years, and by that nature alone, the races were enjoyable because someone was going to come away a champion. I was there when Larson won his championship, which was really cool with new guy. That whole experience, the last, you know, pit stop would put him ahead. All of that kind of stuff was really, really cool to experience live. But you know, the racing itself has never been the reason that it was good. This weekend, the racing was fantastic across all three races that happened there. And I do think that the horsepower matters. I kind of called it out when we were at COTA. I saw it a little bit there. I knew that when we got to these shorter tracks, it's not that you're going faster around the track, but it's the fact that you're going to try to carry more speed into the corners. It's funny because there are guys that are backing out and like really backing out of the corner earlier, but then you're ripe for attack. Other guys can get by you going into the corner, block you coming out of it, or block you halfway through it and force your line wide, and that's going to affect you. And so you're kind of forced most of the race to kind of push your car into the corners, run down those tires. There's tire wear. You have guys that have more tire wear, guys that have less. The setups matter. This is natural, old NASCAR, the way that we've always seen it, while also having cars that put on fantastic restarts that are also built like tanks and can take a hit. Bubba took a fucking drill to the side, and I think I messaged him. I was like, damn, I think Bubba's like done. Like, he took a huge hit. Nope, he went out, finished fifth. That's kind of how these cars are. And so I honestly think this was like not just the best Phoenix, but I am so psyched for the season. We've had such a great start to the season, these four races, and this was phenomenally better than anything we've seen at a track this short at NASCAR in a long time. Awesome. Final thought here. Did you get to go to the barn?
We did not. We had every intention of it, but they were sold out because it was honestly like 80 to 85 degrees. So a lot of people were just looking for shade. And I tried to go up and just be like, hey, can we just buy wristbands? They're like, no, you got to like go over there. And it's like, me and my dad are just like, forget it. We have tons of Gatorade. We have tons of water. We'll find shade and we'll just hang out. Like, we unfortunately didn't get to do it. I would have loved to, but logistically, it was just not on my radar to get that ahead of time. And by the time we were there and had already been like walking around, hanging out, I'm like, do you want to go into this barn thing? And my dad's like not a music guy to begin with. He doesn't do well with like loud clouds. His hearing's not the best. He did tell me on the trip that he went and got hearing aids. So like, I was like, awesome. Like, you're getting older, but there's ways to help with that. So he was like, no, I'm good. Let's just find some shade, eat some food, hang out, and just chat. So I'm like, yeah, totally go with me. I don't need to make every decision on this vacation because we're both there together. So we just didn't do it. Wasn't in the cards.
No worries. Yeah, no, the only reason I was curious when me and you guy went, we snuck in there after the truck race. I think we might have went after the Xfinity race for just like a hot minute too. But we went in after the truck race, and you know, it was championship weekend, so it's all like basically night races. By the time you get in there, it's nighttime. And the champions do come to the barn like later on, like a couple hours later. And so like the truck guy, I couldn't even tell you who won the truck championship that year. And even though I saw it live, I can't even remember. Oh, it was Ben Rhodes. Ben Rhodes came, and he was pretty drunk. It was funny.
I was going to say, he seems like a guy who would put some back.
He did. He had that really famous interview that night where he was really drunk off his ass. But yeah, the Ben Rhodes came down, and that was pretty cool. But yeah, it's a fun experience. But I think like had we ran into the same thing, had we not been able, we just like left the track and we were walking by it to go back into the car, and we were like, should we? And we went right in. Like, there was no wristbands. There was no like purchase to get in. We just went in. And had we not gotten in so easily, I think we probably would have skipped it. We actually got in and got to play cornhole too the whole time, which was
nice.
Pretty sweet. So, yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, let's break down a couple other things. Other series away from Phoenix. F1 was in Australia. A lot of passing. I was about to say lots of really good passing. It wasn't great passing. It was exactly like we kind of predicted about the way these cars are and the way the recharge works. It was hard charge, get it by a guy. Then the guy's got his charge, he blasts back by you, and it was all kind of about, can I work out a position in which my battery's depleted, but the guy can't pass me? And it was just timing of these passes. It was very artificial racing. It was not a great product, honestly, to watch, in my opinion. But F1 hasn't really had that great of a product in recent years anyway. Is it a step in the right direction? Like, it is in the way that the new generation of NASCAR cars was, where it's like, oh, they're bunched together, so therefore it's better, right? And I think from, like, if you're not normally a fan of F1 and you watch that, you're like, look at all this passing. Look at that guy dive in there. But it's so artificial. It feels like a simulation. It doesn't feel real. And it doesn't feel very great. That said, just to recap it, Mercedes did take the top two positions, and then the next two were the Ferraris. And so there's definitely some clear favorites. We're only one race into the season, but Mercedes looks really good. Ferraris look right behind them, and then the rest of them are kind of there. Verstappen started all the way in the back because he wrecked during qualifying, and he ran, I think he finished fifth or sixth, I think. So he had actually had a really, really good race. So clearly drivers still matter, because that was a big thing. Will drivers matter? Drivers still matter. But we'll see. We'll keep seeing what we see. It's not a great first indication, and I know a lot of the drivers complained, saying they hated driving it. So we'll see what happens. Let's see what's up next. Where's IndyCar going this weekend?
IndyCar up next is going to the Java House Grand Prix of Arlington Sunday at 12:30 Eastern. So this is the new Grand Prix that they are doing outside of the Dallas Cowboys football stadium down in Arlington, Texas. So it'll be interesting to see how they pull this off. I've been seeing a lot of Bob Pockrass's tweets. He did some track walk today. He's been tweeting out a lot of information about the event. And what they're trying to do here is they're trying to sell this as a, quote, elevated IndyCar event, which means to me they're trying to be a little more like Formula One for this thing. We'll see if the fans show up and pay Formula One prices. I doubt it. I saw that tickets were not nearly as expensive as the F1 tickets are here in the U.S., probably by a factor of 100, 10, something like that. I don't know. But that's what they're billing it as, and I honestly hope it's a success, because try something new, get new fans out there, and grow the sport. And that is what Fox is honestly helping do, push. That's the only reason IndyCar was at Phoenix, is because of the Fox investment in the series. So we'll see how that goes.
Nice. Yeah, I saw that the Arlington track, when I saw it, most of it is what they do for the, I think it's called the Dallas Marathon, but the marathon that they run there, it's a lot of the track is basically some of the same path that they use for that. At least where they kind of come through to finish. So that's pretty cool. It looks like a good track, at least just knowing F1 tracks and which ones look better from an aerial view. It looks pretty good. Another thing that happened was the Freedom 250 course was revealed, which is the Grand Prix of Washington, D.C. That got announced like right before the season really started. And is, I guess, a pretty cool event. I don't know how to feel about these things in today's political climate. But it's a pretty cool thing that they're going to do. I think the coolest thing that I saw is that the event is free. They do have ticketed parts. They have parts, obviously, with like seating and stands and stuff. But anyone that's like walking along the general promenade can go and watch the race. Like, you're not gonna have to pay to be near the track, which is actually really, really cool. And they do go by, obviously, some really, really awesome stuff. They go right by the White House. They go right by the Smithsonian. There's some really, really cool spots that they kind of like cut around there. I love DC. I lived there when I was a little baby, and have gone back a number of times. And so I think that's that part I'm really jazzed about. Again, don't know how to feel about the political climate of it all. It feels kind of military parade for my birthday ish. But you know, that's Penske for you, I guess.
Penske, Benthany, and they're going there. I don't want to talk about it. Up next for the NASCAR series, we got Las Vegas as our next track. Cup is the Pennzoil 400, presented by Jiffy Lube at 4:00 Eastern. That's another one of those word salad races that NASCAR loves these days. And then the O'Reilly series on Saturday, the Lyuna at 5:30 Eastern. And Lyuna is a union here in the United States. A couple of years back, they had the Lyuna Union sponsoring the truck race here in Milwaukee. So that's a sponsor that we do like. Love our unions wherever we can.
Yeah, they've they've sponsored a number of races at a couple different tracks. And yeah, I mean, it definitely all pro union over here. I remember there was an office right by where I lived in Boston, and I used to pass it, and I love orange. Orange is my favorite color, and they have a big orange sign, and I was always past it, and I had no clue what they were. And then I looked them up one day, and I saw they were a union, and then I would, like, give them a thumbs up as I went by. I was like, yeah.
I had no idea what it was either until I went to the truck race, and I was like, what is this sponsor? And then there were just a ton of union workers there. I'm like, love it. Mm. Love it.
Yeah, it's cool.
Previous winners at Vegas, 2025, Hamlin and Berry, and 2024, Logano and Larson. And was that Josh Berry's first Cup Series win in 25?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Tough track to win at, too, for Barry, so well done.
Yeah, Vegas 2 has been a bit of, a snooze fest in recent years with the new generation of car. I'd say the closest thing was the one that myself and my wife were at. It was her first NASCAR race where Larson won by, like, just a nose. I don't know if you remember that, but they basically ran neck and neck all the way to the line, even though he had a huge lead with, like, five laps to go. That was the closest finish. Otherwise, it's like not been very good. They get out there, the restart looks okay, and then they just spread out. Dirty air kills everyone. Maybe we'll see it different. I'm gonna say Phoenix, because it's in the desert, because it's a sandblasted track, it tears tires a little bit easier. Vegas is like really nice asphalt, and it just hasn't worn through the years, because even though it is technically in the desert as well, it just doesn't get as much churn of the sand and everything else, so there's not as much grime. The track races really, really easily. I don't know that this will be that good of a race. It might be the first snooze that we get. But guess what? We go to Darlington after that. We go to Martinsville after that. We go to Bristol after that. And then Kansas and then Talladega. I mean, it's just banger after banger. I don't want to mention what comes after that because it's cough, Texas. But like through May after this, we're going to be really, really good. So stick with us, listeners. It's going to get really fucking fun. Awesome. Let's go through the standings.
Right on. New guy reads the standings. You're number one still, Tyler Reddick. As you would expect, he has 225 points. In second place, 60 behind, is Ryan Blaney. Bubba Wallace in third. Chase Elliott in fourth. SVG in fifth. Awesome start to the season for SVG. Christopher Bell moving up 18 spots in sixth. Joey Logano in seventh. The next bunch are a bunch of movers as well. So we've got Michael McDowell, Chris Buescher, Kyle Larson, William Byron, Denny Hamlin up 11 in 12th. And then rounding out the top 16, we've got AJ Allmendinger, Carson Hocevar, Ty Gibbs, and in 16th, Brad Keselowski.
Yeah, so it's starting to iron out, I'd say, a little bit. Obviously, I think there's some guys that are lower down. Your guy, Chase Briscoe, is 33rd with 47 points. That's not going to last. He'll make his way up. But, you know, it's one of these things where how long will it take before your season really kind of gets started? You know, it's not always been his fault. You know, maybe last week he could have really pushed to get down pit lane. Austin Cindric's another guy that's down in 30th. And generally, I'd say with his consistency and Penske speed, he should be knocking on the top 16 before the end of the year. And then, you know, when I look further down, I see, or not further down, now they're further up, but like Ross Chastain, Kyle Busch is only 20th. For as kind of quiet of a season as he's had, the difference between 16th and the folks that are just outside of it down to about 24th is not that large. The distance between Tyler Reddick and second place Blaney is 60 fucking points. The difference between 16th and 35th is also 60 points. So there's a lot more bunching. Bunching right at that, like, that line, and we're going to see a ton of movement there. We're only four races into the year. That said, Blaney and Tyler Reddick are up on top because the wins matter that much. You'll see wins catapult people up three, four, five positions most of the year. Bubba's still holding strong in third, all those stage points. I don't think he thought that he was going to have that great of a race at Phoenix, but he showed up at the end and he got some good stage points in the second stage, and that's kind of what's going to keep him there. I think he still has the most stage points. Oh, no, Blaney does, because Blaney got so many this week. But Blaney and Bubba with 40 stage points plus each, that's going to keep them up at the top of the standings for sure. Awesome. Any last comments? Anything else for the fans at home?
Nothing for the fans at home. My only advice would be, if you're even remotely interested in motorsports, get to a track, because the experience is unreal. Every time I go, I have a great time. And I wish I had the time to go to more. I mean, the funding isn't a problem. It's the time, personally. Yeah. So would love to get to more. Going to get to as many as I can. Probably going to Sonoma this year. I've already got tickets. I just got to figure out the logistics. So
nice.
Let's get to some races. And it's been another great episode of the Big One Podcast. At always, you can find us at Podcast Big One on Twitter, and any emails, podcastbigone@gmail.com. This has been Baby G coming off of Phoenix weekend.
And B-Boy coming off of baby weekend.
Absolutely. No better way to do it, my man. Racing and babies, family. That's what it's all about here on the Big One.
Yes, sir. All right. Good luck, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you after Vegas.
Sunday night, 8:52, we are at the hotel, and we are going to recap the IndyCar and NASCAR weekend. We had a lot of hot racing action. We had IndyCar, O'Reilly's, and Cup. And what do we think of the first race? Or I guess I'll ask it a different way. Give me your ranking of the three races. What did we think of them?
Well, I would say that the IndyCar race, even the NASCAR race, boy, oh boy, do those guys go fast. They just come around the track, they're going 175 miles an hour. When NASCAR and these guys go about 150. And they ain't afraid. There's a lot of passing going on. When they at top speed, it's just crazy. They're zinging.
If you can rank them 1, 2, 3, Xfinity, which is now called O'Reilly's. It's impossible to remember it's called O'Reilly's.
Yeah.
Or IndyCar or Cup, what are your ranking orders of the three races?
My ranking would be the definitely the IndyCar.
This number one?
Would be number one. Number two for me would be the O'Reilly Cup race because it had a great finish. And I would rank NASCAR number three because the last 60 laps was a shit show with accidents every 5 miles. I think I watched more pace laps than I did actual laps. And that's why I ranked them number three.
I would agree. I've got the IndyCar race with Rasmussen going crazy with 41 laps to go instead of taking his time and passing. He messed up, he hit the wall, and he screwed himself. Joseph Newgarden took the win there. O'Reilly series, our guy Sam Meyer, he ended up in like third or fourth, something like that. The people behind us were big fans of Joseph Newgarden. He won the race. That's wrong. Justin Allgaier, number seven for the O'Reilly's race. Huge Justin Allgaier fans behind us, so we were happy that they were happy, we were happy. We left the track, got home. Had some cocktails, and Sunday for the Cup Series race, our boy Ryan Blaney wins the race. Absolute shit show, like Big Dog over here to my right said. The Cup Series race was not good at Phoenix. We had blown tires. We had horrible pit strategy all day. It was a mess, but we had fun, and we are going to break at the Big One Podcast.